Potentially, if we want to rent the property out, because we're still on the fence, to be honest, and we want to know how much can we earn monthly or annually with our current property.
Well, we'll liaise with the local property manager. First of all, I advise get there, stay your 2 months, see how you like it, see what you do to it and put in it, because you might suddenly understand that, oh, this bathroom is horrible, we got to get it replaced. And then all of those little things that you might do to the interior as well could change the rent amount that you'd get for it. So get there first, do your 2 months, see what you want to get done and when. Also, if you're going to be starting any kind of renovation project, you want to do that before you put a tenant in there, not while they're in there, right? Yeah. So I don't know, get all your ducks in a row, make a decision, and then because by then rent amounts might change a little bit as well. So by then, when you're ready to rent it out, then we'll get in touch with the local property manager. And we'll tell you what they estimate that the rental income could be, and then, make your decision based on that.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so right before we dive into today's episode, quick reminder that the early bird discounted tickets for the Japan Real Estate Summit, which is happening in about 3 weeks' time, are all but gone. The ticketing page will be up in the next 2 days, and that date, 20 September, is also when we're planning to cut off the early bird pricing. So if you still haven't pre-registered, you really want to get over to summit.realestate.jp and register right now. And to sweeten the deal, here's a special announcement for you. We've got a new speaker lined up for you, as promised. Alicia Wang of Axolotl Capital, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who's going to be talking about investment loans. That's a topic that so many of you are always asking us about, and those are now available even for non-residents of Japan under certain terms, which is exactly the service that her company provides. She'll explain the types of loans available, the processes required to apply and qualify for them, and the types of properties that these loans are available for, as well as, of course, the terms of the loan and all the other important points related to these loans. Very exciting news and definitely a presentation you wouldn't want to miss. You can buy your tickets for one or both days, as well as a streaming ticket for the entire weekend in case you cannot attend in person. The summit again will take place on Saturday and Sunday, 5 and 6 October in Ebisu, which is in Shibuya, Tokyo. And we simply cannot wait to see you all with us in person or in the streaming Zoom room. Almost half of the in-person tickets have already been sold. And again, the early bird discounted tickets will only be available for a couple more days as of the publication of this episode, up until 20 September. So you definitely want to pause this recording right now, head over to summit.realestate.jp and secure your spot. And as you probably know by now, if you've been following this podcast, Alicia is just one of the many amazing speakers we've got lined up for you. Emil Gorgis, Blanca Kobayashi, Anton Warman, Tracy Northcott, Matt Ketchum, Joey and Take from Akiyamar, Daigo Sato, Nick Woolsey, and of course myself. And we'll be covering everything related to Japan's real estate property market. Family homes, investment properties, home loans, investment loans, short-term stay operations, renovations, both commercial and DIY, Akiyas and holiday homes, leveraging your property purchase or rental to acquire a visa to live in Japan, taxes, and more importantly, how to minimize your taxes, and much, much, much more. We've expanded the speakers roster, the days and activities, but equally important, we've also expanded the free networking time and the after summit event schedule. We'll have both a gala dinner and drinks option on the first evening, and an after party on the second evening, for which you'll be able to purchase tickets separately in a week or so if you want to join us. And the main point there is to allow you to mingle more, meet more like-minded folks like yourselves, property enthusiasts, whether beginners or experienced buyers and landlords, investors, industry professionals, and to give you more time to connect with each other, which is really the main point of this event, as you've been repeatedly telling us after them. So we're very, very happy to comply and give you more time and more people to connect with every time if the previous events are anything to go by. We simply cannot wait to see you all with us on the weekend. The event is brought to you by realestate.jp and innovatius.com, our awesome sponsors who are part of the reasons we can now afford to offer so much more for the same ticket pricing levels. So show them some love, hop over to the websites to check them out as well. All right, so for today's episode, and thank you for putting up with this very long intro. As you can tell, I'm pretty excited about the event, as always. If you'll recall, we've had Jordan and Julita from New Zealand on the podcast a couple of months ago when they were just starting to think about purchasing an older family home here in Japan for their own personal holiday use and maybe to relocate to fully in the future when they move to Japan, but also to rent it out when they're not using it. So they've since engaged our services and have purchased their first property in Japan. And this call, which was recorded slightly before settlement, with the purpose of better understanding how things will work for them as remote buyers who are, for now at least, still not living in Japan. So how does management work for non-resident buyers exactly? Connecting to and paying for utilities, cleaning, gardening, rental management in case you do have tenants, and how does that even work with short-term rentals, medium-term or monthly rentals, long-term rentals, property or tenant management, appliances, furniture, when do you apply for and how do you get a short-term stay license if that's your plan, and which type of rentals work better for different types of properties and owners, insurance and what it covers, who needs to get what kind of insurance and when. And then also a bit about strictly investment properties as opposed to holiday homes, which are rented out when not in use. So what does the ideal investment portfolio look like? How does financial management work? How can people open a bank account in Japan? And much, much more. So really excellent conversation with a really awesome couple. Second time on the podcast. Lean back, tune in, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Awesome. Okay. How's the break?
Much needed. But it wasn't really a break. I was working, as you probably noticed from my WhatsApp messages, it wasn't like I wasn't working, but it was a much, much more pleasant environment to work in.
Nice. Mm. You went to Thailand, is that right?
Yeah, Koh Phangan. It's my like island home away from home kind of place.
Nice.
And just straight back to it now.
Yeah, but again, it was a working holiday, so it doesn't feel like a big difference. Yeah.
Awesome. That's good to know. So yeah, great to see you again, Ziv.
Pleasure as well. Yep. So yeah. Almost done with settlement, right? Like we're getting there.
We're nearly there. I would say 70%. Yeah. So we just have some few questions for you as well, just regarding services and whatnot. So just regarding with the house, so we do need water, electricity, and internet basically once we move to the house or before we move to the house. In that case, for water and electricity, do we need someone to be there?
No, water and electricity would normally not need in-person attendance at the property. They do their stuff on the outside. In some very unique cases, if the property has been disconnected from the grid for several years for whatever reason, then yes, they might need, but they'll let us know if that's the case. That's very rare.
Okay.
And internet. So gas needs somebody at the property because the technician needs to come in, check that everything's okay, there's no leaks, and give you like a safety certificate. And internet, it depends on what's available in the area. If we can get WiMAX there, which is like a 5G router that you can just plug into the wall and you're connected, then we'll go with that. And then we just send you the router whenever you get there, you just plug it in. If that's not available, or if the speeds are not that attractive for 5G in that area, then we'll go with a normal connection, in which case somebody will need to be present for the installation as well.
Okay.
I see. And the gas, would that be related to the water as well?
It might also be the cooker. The cooker is easy enough to replace. I mean, it costs money, but it's not a huge investment. So if you really want to, you can remove the gas cooker and put in a hot plate. But if the water heating equipment requires gas, then that's much more expensive to replace. You'd obviously probably prefer to stay with that.
Okay. And regarding with the internet, because I'm not sure if we really need to connect to an internet, or would be like a pocket Wi-Fi would do the job.
How often are they're pretty fast these days? How often are you planning to get there, and for how long? Can you remind me?
So would be 2 months at this stage.
Two months a year.
Oh, how often are we gonna go?
How often and how long? So 2 months per visit, but how many times a year?
So at the moment, the first one would be 2 months, which is next month.
Yep.
So I don't know if connected to the internet is a must, especially if we're planning to rent it out as well.
I wouldn't, because it's a contract that's usually at least for 2 years, and there's a penalty if you choose to disconnect. It's not a huge penalty, but it's a few hundred bucks. If you're only there for 2 months and then planning to, you know, look at the option of renting it out, then I would probably get a pocket Wi-Fi and wait with that. If for any reason we decide not to rent it out, or you decide that you're coming in more often, then, you know, we can re-examine the option.
Okay.
Thank you for that. And also, during our stay, what fees do we need to pay for the service? Like, I know you've said it's an hourly rate, but how much, and do we get an invoice every service?
Well, we work with customers who we're managing properties for. We usually work with a statement. So once a year, we'll provide an annual expenses statement, and we'll show you exactly how much we've deducted from the retainer that we're holding and what that was for. We can issue an invoice for our fees. We can't issue a tax invoice for other fees, because that's not ours, but we can issue an invoice for our portion of the fees if you're interested. Yeah, that's not a problem.
I see. Yeah, a question regarding
with
that.
With the how much. So for us to be the contact person for all of these third parties, utilities, if you'll need a cleaning company, landscaping, internet, whatever the case may be, if it's only utilities, which requires us to sign up for auto deductions from our bank account and just receive and file statements, then we charge 2 hours per month. And we're still going to be the contact person, and we're still going to be paying the bills when you're at the property. So there's no difference from our perspective, whether you're there or not. Right? You don't have a bank account. You don't have an address. You don't have a local phone. I mean, you have an address, but you don't have a residency certificate. So the utility companies cannot onboard you directly, whether it's for a period of a few months or forever. It has to be done through a Japanese entity. So whether you're at the property or not, we're still the ones getting the bills and paying them. And we're still the ones who are the emergency contact person. So if the electric company wants to tell us that, you know, there's issues, there's a shutdown, there's a blackout, the water company needs us to, they'll contact us. They're not going to contact you because you're not available and not in Japan and don't speak Japanese. So those 2 hours per month is for us being the contact person and handling all payments for all utilities, including internet if required.
Okay.
If you also need which I would recommend when you're not there, a cleaning airing company, somebody to come in once a month or two, open the doors and the windows so that, you know, mold doesn't build up, do some light vacuuming, again, for the same reason, then that's another contract with another company that we need to put in place and be the contact person for.
Okay.
And that's not an automated kind of for a plugin like the utility companies. It's an actual small local contractor that we'll be in regular touch with. We'll need to send them a copy of the keys. We'll need to receive their annual reports and let them know if there's anything that we need them to redo. So if you need us to do that, that's one additional hour per month.
Okay. So that's another third-party company.
Correct.
You say.
Yes. And if you also need us to organize gardening and landscaping, I can't recall exactly what your backyard and garden look like there, but in case they do need regular maintenance, then that's another monthly hour because that's another third party we need to be in touch with.
Okay, good to know. But yeah, our property wouldn't, it doesn't have any backyard or.
Okay, so it'll be two, probably 3 hours because you'll probably need airing and cleaning. And the cleaning companies, we can work with them on the spot, like come in once and do the job kind of thing, which is what we do with customers who are here, let's say most of the year and just need that done a few times when they're not.
Okay.
But in your case, if we're talking about 2 months and then potentially being vacant for a while, I mean, once we rent it out, then everything changes, right? So the tenant will sign up for utilities instead of us. There's not going to be any need for internet and there's not going to be any need for cleaning and airing. But assuming that you're there for 2 months a year, and after that, let's say it's going to be vacant for a while, then it would be better and more cost efficient if we enter a contract with a cleaning company, by which they come in once a month or whatever the frequency that they recommend is, and do the thing, and then we're in touch with them on a regular basis only if they need us to.
Okay, so potentially, we can opt out if we don't need the cleaning company.
Confirm. I mean, each municipality, each location has different cleaning companies. We'll confirm with them in advance what are the terms to terminate, but usually that wouldn't be an issue yet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So next question would be, so we're planning to buy like small appliances. Obviously, we're going to live there for like a couple of months, like small fridge with a freezer, microwave, and maybe just an induction cooker.
Yep.
Not like the proper cooker you would connect to the gas.
Yep.
And not an actual stove. So would that
there might actually be a stove there, isn't there?
From
I actually can't remember.
From the video, I don't think so. But yeah. So let's say we'll do that. Everything's gonna be brand new. Would that be an issue if let's say we rent the property out once we're done with our stay?
It's not an issue, but you would either put those things on the rent on the tenancy lease as provisions to the tenant, in which case you'll be responsible to repair and replace them if and when anything happens to them, because now they're a part of the tenancy agreement.
So it's going to be part of the chattels, is that what you...
Correct. Or if, you know, depending on the price of what you bought and how interested you are in you know, keeping it or not, you could just gift it to the tenant and then it's not your responsibility anymore.
I see.
Or you could go to a local secondhand shop, recycle shops they're called here, and see if they would just come and pick it all up from you, and they might, you know, give you $50 for the lot or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Because from what we've heard, Japanese are very particular when it comes to
hygiene
like appliances. Is that right?
To like use somebody else's.
Like,
is that true?
Tenants at the income level that you're talking about with an old house like that are not exactly the pickiest lot. They don't have too many options.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
And next question, maintenance and repair. So from listed points from the building inspection, I don't know if you still remember.
I will open it again.
We just want to know which ones do we need to address first if we plan to rent it out.
Yeah, give me a sec. Let me indeed open that up again. The only thing that I'd say is really urgent is that potential leak under the attic space. That would, I mean, to really get into that and check, the source and that means a roof inspection, basically. Mm. And we do know that the roof needs a bit of work anyway. So I think the best idea would be to, as soon as possible after you purchase, get a roof company. We don't need just the inspection because we already know that there are some things that would need attention there.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll get a proper roofing company to come in, put their scaffolding around the house, climb the roof, and then do a proper hands-on inspection and repair everything that needs to be repaired. I can't tell you how much the repairs would cost, but the whole scaffolding inspection thing, it's like a big project that costs like $3,000-$4,000 usually.
Mm-hmm.
And then repair whatever needs to be repaired will be
separate.
If it's an entire roof, it might be 2-3 million yen, but it didn't look like that from the inspection report.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which hopefully just a few spot repairs, tiles that are cracked, broken. Hopefully, but no idea until somebody gets up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the rest of it, I mean, looked like pretty normal wear and tear. I'm just looking at my summary. Let me open up the actual report.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDesk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Okay, chalking cracks, general deterioration could potentially in the future lead to leaks. So if and when you've got the budget for it, it's not a bad idea to give the house an exterior spruce.
Mm-hmm.
Same goes for, what's that? Rusting was observed on outdoor hardware in various locations. Okay, that's definitely long-term. They're saying when you do repaint, please include the anti-rusting thing. No cracks and chips in the roofing material that they could see, but there were some partial cracks and deterioration of the paint. Yeah, so that one they also mentioned as soon as possible. And considering the potential leak in the attic space, that's probably the best idea. Let me just share the screen. So we're talking about the same things, and also for the benefit of anyone viewing, give me a second. Where is that report here? Okay, so let me just move that toolbar out of the way. So that is if and when you can afford an exterior renovation, basically painting, repairing cracks, caulking, that sort of thing. This could be part of that, but they're saying not for the next 10 years, according to the inspectors. So I would include those two in the same exterior renovation whenever you happen to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
This, as they wrote, and as evidenced by the potential water leak, which we'll get to in a minute, this roofing thing should be addressed as soon as possible. Because water leaks can lead to bigger damages, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Cracks and other deterioration events were observed on the floor surface. Not urgent, but perform maintenance as soon as possible. That's the balcony from the looks of
it. Balcony.
The balcony. Yeah. From the third floor, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. You don't want it crumbling either while you're standing on it or while people are passing downstairs kind of thing. But yeah, I agree with this observation. Not urgent, but soon would be good, right?
Mm.
Yeah. That was nothing of note. Okay, so that's, I think, just reiterating the first photo that we looked at, that the exterior needs a renovation. They're not specifying any particular time frame here. Same things we looked at in the initial picture. So that's just going into detail of what they were referring to.
Yeah.
Same. So this is all part of the exterior beehive. That looks more like a wasp's nest than a beehive, I would say. So I would definitely get rid of that soon.
Do we need to hire someone to remove that, or can we remove that ourselves? Would that be?
I wouldn't, but I don't know. You live in New Zealand. It's wild, wild country out there.
What I would do.
If you're in the mood, go for it. They said that they were not observing any wasps actually there at the moment. Yeah. So you're probably safe. But now that it's summer, they could potentially move back in. So,
okay.
I don't know. Maybe get a professional. It's not a bad idea.
Mm.
You might also want to lump that in with termite treatment, which is always a good idea for houses at this age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's going to be a few $1,000, and I'm sure they'll get rid of the wasp's nest as a freebie.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know a company who could do that, right?
We know a bunch of companies who can do that. The question is, do we know one in your area? But if not, we'll research find one. That's what we do usually do.
Okay.
Yeah. Here. That's still all part of the exterior as far as I can tell. So the exterior renovation you'll be looking at is probably going to be a few million yen for a house.
Mm.
Nothing urgent that they've mentioned that needs to be done immediately. So that's maybe something to plan and budget for a few years down the track, like save up for it.
Yeah.
Rainwater enters through the cracks, leaks may occur, and it might, yeah, you might need some new caulking. Okay, so that's all part of what they've mentioned previously. Here as well. That's all exterior. Moss is developing, maybe leaking during wet weather. Yeah, so that's, again, that's all due to the cracks on the exterior, right? The cracks and the issues with connecting the rusty drain and this kind of thing. So that all could potentially be leading to water leaks. They haven't noticed any signs of water leaks on the interior except for the one under the roof. So it's unlikely that the exterior, that the wall cracks are leaking into your property at the moment, because there's no evidence of that. But it could happen as they widen or as weather events become a bit more powerful. So again, good idea to plan and budget for an exterior renovation in the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And this color, so yeah, same thing, chalking we've spoken about, rust that seems to be traveling with the exterior walls along with rainwater. Yes, so that will all be hopefully fixed once we fix the cracks and the leaks. Fence post decay, I don't know if that's a huge concern. Up to you if you want to get that done, if and when, but I definitely say that's not urgent. That's the fence separating your property from the next one.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a post. Shower hose you can replace on your own, I'm assuming, just at a home center or whatnot.
Yeah.
Toilet remote control, again, that's a matter of an appliance. You can just buy it anytime you want. Definitely not urgent.
Insect screens,
same story. We can get a company in to replace those for you at any time. They're usually not crazy expensive. Failure of fittings to open the close the doors operation is stiff. I mean, get there and play with it and see if it's something that requires attention. I'm guessing they're just being a bit meticulous
on
that.
I think most of that would be, yeah, we'll figure it out. Like,
yeah, that's definitely nothing major. Yeah. Fire alarms you'll have to install. That's a legal requirement these days.
Okay. Yeah. Any specific fire alarms that you recommend? Or
no, you can DIY it, or you can get us to just get a company to do everything for you. It's totally up to you.
Okay.
And I think cracks and concrete. Oh, this is okay. This is now the underfloor and attic space. So some cracks in concrete, but within range. I mean, within acceptable range at this age. Otherwise, they would have noted that. Animal feces and rust. The animals will most likely, whatever's there, it's not huge feces, so it's hopefully not a bear, but whatever's there will probably move out once you're there. If you keep hearing rustling noises in the attic or underfloor or what have you, then we can get an exterminator in.
Mm-hmm.
But normally animals move out once the people move back in.
Right.
Rust. Yeah. Whoever you get to do the exterior, when they will anti-rust, obviously the drainage pipe that we saw earlier, they can also probably crawl under there and do that one as well, if required. But again, nothing urgent. Discoloration that looks like water stains. Right. So this is probably the leak that they were referring to, but I think that will be fixed once we get the roof sorted.
Mm-hmm. So that's coming from the roof.
I mean, it's the attic space. It's the only likely source would be the roof, I would say. Mm-hmm. But okay. I'm no expert. They'll get in there. They'll check the light. Yeah. Now.
Okay.
They have mentioned that the roof needs some treatment at the very top there. So it's very likely, I'd say, that that's where it's coming from. And I think that was it for the important notes, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yep. Yeah. So again, like none of the major stuff that are, you know, that might potentially be deal killers for us are there. There's no tilting, sinking, termite tracks. There's no like holes in the roof that we definitely know would cost a million or two or three.
Mm-hmm.
It's a green light from our perspective, but there will be expenses as you renovate and repair it over time.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Because it's not a brand new house. And it's an existing house. And
Yeah. And not too young at that.
Yeah. You're right. And yeah, so next question. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Just one thing. Do you know a company who offers as well who could change the front door lock to a smart lock? And would you recommend that?
If you like it, it's totally a personal lifestyle choice, man. I don't know. And again, we don't specifically know companies unless we've already done that in that area, but it's very easy to find them.
Yeah, that's the only thing for us. Like we're foreigners in that area. And yeah, pretty much we don't know what's around the area and the services that we're going to get. So most of the time.
Well, you can't communicate with them even if you do know them, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So we'll get that done for you. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And next question.
All of those things that we've just spoken about, organizing renovations, repairs, whatnot, that's not part of the monthly 1 or 2 or 3 hours that you're 2 or 3 hours that you're paying us for. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Separate things that we charge for by the hour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the same rate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. And yeah, so potentially if we want to rent the property out, because we're still on the fence, to be honest, and we want to know how much can we earn monthly or annually with our current property.
Yep. Well, we'll liaise with the local property manager. First of all, I advise get there, stay your 2 months, see how you like it, see what you do to it and put in it, because you might suddenly understand that, oh, this bathroom is horrible, we got to get it replaced. And then all of those little things that you might do to the interior as well could change the rent amount that you'd get for it. So get there first, do your 2 months, see what you want to get done and when. Also, if you're going to be starting any kind of renovation project, you want to do that before you put a tenant in there, not while they're in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, get all your ducks in a row, make a decision, and then because by then rent amounts might change a little bit as well. So by then, when you're ready to rent it out, then we'll get in touch with a local property manager and we'll tell you what they estimate that the rental income could be, and then, you know, make your decision based on that.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I've listened to your podcast lately with Emil Gorgis, and now I'm on the fence personally after listening to that episode.
Which one was that? We were talking about really seasonality and stuff.
Yeah. Like if you're looking for a cash flow, or if you're looking for a, what's the other one? There's another choice. It's either the cash flow, rent it out,
or potential growth.
Leave it as it is. Yeah.
What do you mean by
potential growth, like not rent it out, so you don't have to maintain it as much as you will if you're gonna rent it out. Yeah.
I mean, it'll be profitable. It's not like the expenses will be more than the income. You're not going to be negatively geared on a rental. And the only issue is if and when will it be available to you when you want to use it, right?
Right. So from your perspective, it looks like you're leaning towards still renting it out.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's very much a personal choice and a matter of how often do you want to be using it. If you do want to be using it regularly or fairly regularly, then the only way to rent it out would be short or medium term. You wouldn't put a long-term tenant in there on a two-year rolling lease if you're going to be using the property every once in a while, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. But once you know that you're not, if you know that you're now not going to be using the property, I don't know, for 6 years, then maybe it does make sense to put a long-term tenant in there. It's less profit potentially, depending on how easy it is to rent this property out on short-term Airbnb and so forth. Mm. So it could be potentially less profitable, but it's definitely much less headaches than short-term rentals.
Yeah.
You just...
But within our case, are we qualified to do short-term rentals as well?
Not as is, but you could apply for a license if the local municipality allows it, depending on how far you are from schools. And that might also entail a few additional installations and renovations, like you'll have to maybe change the ratio between the common areas and the bedrooms, install fire safety equipment, emergency exit sign, like maybe semi-dedicated reception area, whatever. So if and when you want to go down that path, we'll get in touch with a research and management company that specializes in short-term rentals.
Yeah.
And we'll see what you would need for this property to comply.
But it's not Minpaku. It's something else.
No, Minpaku. That's what I'm referring to. Yeah.
Oh, it's Minpaku. Yeah. Okay. Airbnb, is that right?
Well, Airbnb is one of the platforms that you can advertise those. Booking, Agoda.com, Yahoo, Rakuten. There's a bunch of Japanese ones that do short-term rental. The short-term stay management company will be advertising on all of those channels. But to rent out for periods of less than 1 month and without a tenancy lease in place, you will need a license. And those booking platforms will not let you list the property without displaying the license. So you would have to apply for a Minpaku license. Otherwise, if it's medium-term rentals, meaning monthly rentals with a lease in place and for a period of at least 1 month, then that doesn't fall under any special legislation. You can do that anytime.
So there's long-term, there's medium, and then there's short. Okay.
Correct. Short-term requires special legislation. Medium and long are lumped under the same legislation, but you could potentially get more profit out of a medium-term rental because the monthly rate is obviously higher than a two-year rate.
Yeah. And the license.
But I mean, there's more hands-on. Yeah, I mean, with medium-term rentals in your case, I mean, the property is not like a major income driver for you. So I'm assuming you're not going to be constantly tweaking and getting panicky every time there's a long vacancy or whatnot.
Yeah.
So probably not too hands-on, but short-term Airbnb style, you would need to give it a lot more attention. Just bear that in mind.
Okay.
You're not managing it yourself, but the property manager will constantly be reporting to you occupancy, vacancy rates here compared to other competition in the area. It's like kind of like running a business to some degree.
Yeah. Okay. And having that license, would that mean that we have to renew it every once a year, something like that?
I can't recall. I'm assuming there would be a check and a renewal once a year. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's not like it's going to be a huge expense. They just come in and have a look and tell you if you need to fix anything.
So regarding with the monthly income and annual income, would that be a separate topic, or would
once we
need a property manager to know that, is that right?
Yes. Right. So we need, if it's short term, we need to first research the local municipality regulations and see what you would need to comply with the license requirements.
Okay.
If it's long-term or medium-term, we can do it anytime you want. There's nothing to check or apply for. With medium-term, we'll need to check that there's a property manager that can handle monthly rentals in that area, because there's not always... Can you remind me exactly where the property is?
It's Kino, Osaka.
Kino, Osaka. So within Osaka Prefecture, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I know at least one company that I can contact who we are already working with that covers that area.
Okay.
They will let you know, because a lot of the time they're not even going to take it on. If they feel that this particular location is not going to get enough guests on a regular enough basis, then it's not worth it for them. They might not even take it on.
Yeah.
Right.
But long-term rentals tend to work everywhere. I mean, people are renting out in the sticks, people are renting in locations that are far from a train station, will eventually get a tenant, but the less comfortable / convenient the property is, the longer the vacancies would be.
All right. Okay. Yeah. That answered some of our questions here as well, which is great. Also, next question. Are you okay to move on? Once the settlement date comes, who will be taking the keys from the seller's agent?
Out
of the country.
The way it usually works with us, properties that we are managing on behalf of customers, we will be getting the keys. Depending on how many sets we'll be getting, we'll keep one here for backup and any kind of emergency. Yeah. And then we'll send, if there's a cleaning company, we'll send one copy of those keys to the cleaning company. And as many copies as you want, we'll send to you along with all the property documentation that you'll be... Oh, no, sorry, you're not buying through us. So the property documentation will get to you from the realtor. And we will be sending you the keys once, the copies of the keys once we receive them.
Okay.
So the post-settlement checklist there has an option to let us know how many copies of the keys you want.
Okay, but in this case, like for the ones, just because I'm still getting confused, sorry. So basically, once the settlement date comes, obviously we're still not in Japan, right?
Yep.
So you will directly receive the key from correct. The seller's agent and keep it first while we're not in Japan. Like
in your case, probably from the buyer's agent, not from the seller's agent, but yes.
So Mika-san.
Yes, because you have a buyer's agent, so she would be acting on your behalf, receiving everything and posting to us, or she'll instruct the seller's agent to send them directly to us, whatever the case may be.
Okay. And then when we arrive in Japan,
we'll send them to your hotel. Tell us where you're staying and we'll send them there.
Right. Okay, right. Make more sense now. Thank you.
No problem. Or I mean, we could send them to you in New Zealand if we have enough time for international postage. It's totally up to you. But I mean, if you're coming to Japan anyway, it's cheaper and safer to just send it to your hotel. Yeah.
Safer. That's right. And also going back to making it as a rental property, does the landlord pay utilities or does the tenant pay?
No, tenants pay utilities.
Okay. All right.
You're just paying property tax.
All right. Okay. Makes sense.
Or rates, I think they're called in Australia and New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the council rates.
Yeah.
So water and electricity would be under tenant's name.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And if he needs gas as well.
And gas. Yeah. So they take over gas. The tenants take over gas.
Yeah, right? You basically disconnect and they arrange it on their own. And then when they move out, they disconnect and you reconnect.
Mm. Okay, so basically they would shoulder and organize for themselves all the utilities that needs to be connected.
Yeah, the property manager might give them a hand, but it's nothing that you need to be concerned with.
Okay, and then we're just deal with like the council rates.
Yeah, and do they have to get any insurance type of insurance?
Yes, it's not a legally mandated thing, but most property managers and landlords will refuse to take on tenants without personal insurance for themselves and their belongings.
Right.
And you'll be getting insurance for the property.
Right. That's the next question. As a property owner, what type of insurances do we have to get?
You don't have to get anything. It's totally up to you. But Japan being Japan, earthquakes and as a result of earthquakes, fires are definitely a thing.
Yeah.
And insurance is very, very cheap in Japan. I mean, it'll cost you normally less than, I'd say, 3,000 New Zealand for a 5-year policy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I would get the maximum coverage that I can. There's no reason to live on the edge with these kind of prices.
Yeah. So other than earthquake and fire, would there be anything
else? It covers not everything, but a lot. It covers any kind of earthquake damage, fire damage, lightning is included in fire, theft. It covers tsunamis, because tsunamis are a derivative of earthquakes, right? And they cover water typhoon damages and so forth.
Okay. Yeah.
And things are covered up to 100%. Earthquakes from memory up to 50%.
All right. Okay.
There could be an option to upgrade that. I'll look into that and let you know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you have a provider that you can recommend to us when getting this type of insurance.
Yeah, the insurer that we work with actually cannot take on direct subscribers if they're not Japanese residents.
Okay.
But they do give us really, really good terms because we've got over 300 properties insured with them over the years. And so the amount of compensation that we get, the length of compensation that we get in some cases, like for example, if you have landlord insurance and a tenant dies in the property, most insurance companies will cover you for reduced or missing rents up to a year. Our insurance company will do it up to 2 years. They've also never gave us any issues with any claims. They've never rejected a claim. They never even looked into them too deeply, again, because we give them a lot of business. So what we do is we sign up for a insurance policy under our company name with yourselves nominated as beneficiaries of any compensation. Otherwise, we can just put you in touch directly. There are foreigner-friendly insurance companies in Japan. I've just exchanged some emails with one of them today for a customer.
All right.
So you can sign up directly, but I can't guarantee, actually, I can almost guarantee that the terms would not be as favorable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
So it's still ideal to go straight to you. Okay.
Yes, not something that we're particularly keen on because it takes a lot of our time every year and we're not charging you anything extra for it, but it's okay. Going to be much better terms, yes.
Okay, and how long do you recommend, like, if we want to get an insurance, do we pay, like, annually already, or?
You can, but insurance premiums tend to slightly creep upwards over time. Uh-huh. So it's better to lock in the rate for the five-year period if you can.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. And yeah, what's the next question? Okay, so if we still plan to rent it out, do we get a short list of applicants?
Yeah.
Can we review that? Like,
you can, but I'd let your property manager do that. It's their job.
It's their job, that's right. Yeah.
And also, I mean, the cultural nuances of why this particular tenant is better than another, plus the localized knowledge of what kind of tenants exist in that area and who I would definitely leave that to the property managers. They know what they're doing.
All right. And is there a law in Japan that, okay, we want to implement that this is a
non-smoking house
or that's out of our hand? That will be.
I have not heard of that. You can try. I very much doubt you'll be able to enforce it though.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
It's not. Japan is very much a smoking country still.
Yeah.
It's very, very rare. I have not seen a tenancy lease that says no smoking, but I suppose it's possible.
So, okay, future plan. Let's say we want
to. I'm just thinking about it now. Regardless of whether it's, you know, stipulated by lease or not, we can ask the property manager to only take on non-smoking applicants, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right. That's not a bad idea. And yeah, so future plan, let's say we want to purchase more properties. Does it matter or any advantage if we want to, let's say we want to build our portfolio in
just one area?
We've started in Osaka now, so we want to build in just one area. Is there any advantage
to that?
Or
do you recommend to like scatter like the properties that we will buy?
I mean, from a management perspective, we'll be able to get probably, if not better deals, at least easier communications, because it'll be one property manager managing multiple properties or, one utility company with several accounts in the same area. I mean, management would be a bit easier, but you're outsourcing management to us, so it's not a huge concern for you. Otherwise, it's more of a personal choice. Again, I mean, you didn't really go for what we would say is an investment asset class, right? You went for an older house, not a condo unit or a building. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the future purchases will look like, but I'm assuming your personal preferences should play a bigger role here. Unless the idea is really to build a strictly investment portfolio, not like in this case where you're planning to maybe use the house or move to Japan. Or if you're planning a strictly investment portfolio, then I definitely wouldn't stick to Osaka. I'd spread it geographically, socioeconomically, a bunch of different cities, some of them higher yield, some of them more safe and stable, but lower yield, that will construct a portfolio that will actually do the best that we can as an investment portfolio.
Right.
But if the goal is for you to be physically close to your properties, or if you think you might want to use the other properties in person as well at some point, then that's a personal choice. That's totally up to you.
Okay.
In that case, maybe you do want them all in Osaka. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've got a customer who has a strictly investment property portfolio. Like, he's not using the properties himself at all, but he really likes Fukuoka City, so he always buys in Fukuoka City. Like, it's a thing. I mean, if you like the place and you want to have investment properties there, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But Osaka yields are pretty low compared to other cities.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, not compared to Tokyo and Niseko, but any other city almost.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy.
All right. And what else do we have here? Revenue stamp to be paid for sales contract.
It's like $10. It's $10. Don't worry about it.
Right.
I mean, if it's a really expensive property, it might be $100, but it's rare.
Okay.
All right. And yeah, so this one, it may be a segue, but I don't know if your company offers on how to open a bank account as a foreigner.
There is no opening a bank account as a non-resident foreigner. That only becomes an option once you are either with some kind of residency.
Yeah.
Or potentially, not easy, but potentially possible if you set up a Japanese company and hire, not like full salary hire, but appoint a Japanese resident as your representative director.
Yeah.
Then you might be able to open a corporate bank account. But your accountant, your bookkeeper will tell you that you shouldn't be using that for personal expenses and personal, like that should be an actual company with a business plan that does stuff that makes sense based on the articles of incorporation. So just for the purpose of a bank account, it's probably not worth it, because companies come with like $2,000-$3,000 a year just in minimum corporate tax and accounting and bookkeeping and stuff that you just wouldn't have to do as individuals. I wouldn't do it just for the purpose of having a bank account. But if and when you do, like you mentioned, plan to relocate to Japan, then once you switch from a tourist visa to really any kind of other visa that comes with a residency certificate, then it should be easy to open a bank account.
Okay. All right.
If you do choose to go the corporate path, then yes, not NTI, but my other company that I was going to mention, I'll caveat that. Once we're done, I'll let you know what I was talking about with the documents. But I've got another company that can help you with opening a bank account as well.
Okay.
Right. Anything else? I think that answers like all of it, really.
Yeah. Yes.
You forgot.
When is the autumn summit going to happen, Siv?
We have finalized the dates. It is going to be let me just confirm that I'm not talking out of my ass. Yeah, 5-6 October, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be 2 days this time.
I think we're still there when it happens.
There you go.
There, okay.
Because we wanted to like go to Fukuoka actually.
Yeah, we're gonna.
Yeah, because
you're here for 2 months, you can do anything you want.
Yeah. So we're planning to like do that, and
hopefully you're free during that time.
Yeah.
If you let me know if we decide on the dates in advance, I'll make sure I am free.
Okay.
Because we're quite intrigued with Fukuoka.
We're quite intrigued with Fukuoka.
To ask you about like, do you recommend like just focusing on one area or like scattering it around? Because
I talk about investment or to stay living.
Yeah, investment. Yeah.
Investment Fukuoka is very similar to Osaka in the sense that it goes up in value quite well when the economy does well. And it's growing in population. Fukuoka grows in population actually more organically. Osaka is more a case of people migrating in from smaller townships. And they both have relatively low yields and relatively high prices. Osaka is still a bit, depends on the neighborhood, actually. I think they're about on par price-wise these days.
Okay. Cool.
Food, I don't know, arguable. But yeah, we're talking investment anyway. Don't worry about it.
All right, then. All right. Yeah, we will see you in Fukuoka.
Yeah, is the autumn summit kid-friendly? Are kids allowed in the autumn summit?
Kids?
Yeah.
They're very welcome. I think they'll be very bored.
We just don't have anyone to look to babysit. So we have
You'll have to entertain them while you're there. But otherwise, yeah. I mean, Tracy comes with her son sometimes and he just sits under the table with an iPad, if you're okay with that. Yeah.
That's good to know. Okay. Yeah.
Otherwise, we can try to find you a babysitter. I mean, the foreigner community is fairly supportive in Japan. Right. In Fukuoka, I can definitely find you a babysitter. I'm sure in Tokyo, Tracy or Blanca or anyone on the forum can find you one as well.
Awesome. Good to know, Siv. Anything else that we have
just
to
don't tell? Don't go with online babysitting services. I've heard some horror stories about those.
Yeah.
Go with like a personal acquaintance, word of mouth recommendation kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if this is like off the topic as well, but we're planning to learn the language. Do you know someone who could offer to teach us Japanese as well?
A bunch of people. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to do it while you're here, or do you want to start online?
We're looking for someone who could actually come to our place, not online.
While you're here in Japan, to Osaka.
While in Osaka, so come.
Okay, I don't know anyone like that, but I'm sure you could find one. There are free volunteer classes in every city in Japan that you can go to once or twice a week.
Right.
Most big cities, I'm sure Osaka would have a bunch of them in different wards and different neighborhoods. If you're really serious about it, I know people that just sign up for five of them, five different days of the week. And then every day you get your 2 hours of free tutoring, which is really good.
So like different branch. Oh, that's really good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that.
And that's for
free. they're not professional teachers. They're usually pensioners, retirees, people with time on their hands that wanna mingle with foreigners and stuff. But they go by the book. Like they take the most popular Japanese language study books and they go through them with you page by page and they help you with pronunciation. I mean, if you're the self-learning type, that's a very good cheap/free solution.
Yeah.
I think we would still ask you for your contacts just in case that once we move to Australia, we can use that online classes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know one guy that comes highly recommended, but the internet is full of them, by the way. There's a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Maybe we're going off the topic now. Not
there is no such thing as off the topic.
Getting too excited.
Everything is interesting for someone.
But yeah, I think that's already everything that we need.
Okay. So what I wanted to add is that, you know how I said we're not onboarding clients for a full purchase facilitation until at least a few months down the track. That's why you're working with a buyer's agent. They've just asked me to also stop taking on management clients. So I'll need to take you on at my second company. Okay. So before you execute those forms, let me just have a chat with my partner because that's like fresh news from today. So let me have a chat with my partner at the other company, confirm that she's okay taking that on, and then I'll amend the forms and send them back to you.
Okay. All right then.
All right, Siv. Thank you for the info and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Okay. See you soon. Have a nice day.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye. Pleasure.
So there you have it, our second conversation with the super cute Jordan and Julita. Although now that I've met them in person, I can also testify that their daughter is even cuter than they are. Now, Jordan is also a very talented photographer and videographer, by the way, and he'll be shooting our summit next month. So if you're attending, you'll also have a chance to meet them all in person and pick their brains about their experience purchasing here in Japan. And speaking of the summit, again, just a reminder, early bird discounted tickets are only going to be available for a couple more days and only to those who pre-register on summit.realestate.jp, which we'll also link to in this episode show notes, of course. Get over there right now and secure your discounted tickets before they disappear. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!